This week on Art of the Air features sculptor-painter Roman Villarreal, who uses visual aspects of his community and neighborhood as an inspiration for his work, along with his fabric artist wife, Maria Villarreal, discussing his exhibit at Miller Beach's Marshall J. Gardner Center running through April. Our spotlights on the Area Artists Association exhibit, Anything Goes, running April 1st through May 31st.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org. And is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight from the Area Artists Association, which is associated with Lebesnik Center for the Arts, Christine Hubble, who's going to be telling us about an upcoming exhibit called Anything Goes. It'll be running April 1st through May 31st, and it'll be at the LaPorte County Convention and Visitor Center, and she'll tell us all about what to expect of the exhibit. Christine, welcome to Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you.
Aloha. Yeah, very nice meeting you.
So tell us about the exhibit. What can we expect with Anything Goes?
Well, what I love about that is I'm feeling a lot of energy with this exhibit. Anything Goes is designed to sort of unlock our members' creativity and artistic freedom. And so I'm expecting a lot of vibrancy and a lot of creativity in the pieces that people select for the show. We have more than 50 members now, so we're hoping for a good showing for this exhibit. And it'll be at that LaPorte County Convention and Visitor Center. We're hoping to get a nice big crowd for the April 11th reception. And especially because that's a chance where people can come and meet the artists and ask us about our artwork and really get to know us. So we're hoping for a good community showing for that.
So who chooses the pieces? Like, do artists submit more than one and then you kind of pick internally, or do you use an outside person?
No, for our exhibits, we curated ourselves. So, our exhibit committee comes up with a theme, and we take a look at our recent work, and or sometimes we'll make work for that theme, and then we'll submit our pieces for the show. And a lot of times, the venue will also help us decide, because depending on the size of the venue and how many pieces can go in, we might not be able to fit, you know, three or four works for everybody. Artists are working in all different scales. We have people doing jewelry, mixed media, fiber arts. Some of our artists work very large. Some of them, like myself, I work pretty small. So we have this wonderful, wonderful range of artists and mediums. And we bring to these exhibits some of the best, most recent things we can come up with.
Tell us a little bit about membership in Area Artists in case someone is interested. And of course, by way of saying that, I also am part of the Area Artists Association. But
yes, you are.
Tell us about how membership is on. You can't just join. You have to be curated in.
Yes. So twice a year, we take a look at applications. If someone is interested in joining our group, I highly recommend coming to our meetings. The next meeting that will be coming up will be April 12th, 2026. That will be a Sunday. We meet at the Lubesnik Center from 1 to 4 p.m. Guests are welcome at those meetings. You can come in and meet all of us and kind of hear how we operate, get a feel for the group. And then there's an application process. It's a very simple application. You can download it from the website, which is areaartistsassociation.org. And there's some other things that you'll submit with that, some, I think a CV and some images of your work. You submit that, and then twice a year in May and November, our committee takes a look at those applications and juries people in for that. And then once you're in, you're in. And we want you to join us and do some volunteering to be a member in good standing. And I should mention the sort of like the reason that we're together is to help promote one another as artists, to help professionalize ourselves. And so we do these exhibits once a year to get our work in exhibits, but the members are also exhibiting all over the community. They do solo shows. Many of us are very active in the arts community here in Northwest Indiana in a variety of ways.
What is the membership fee?
The membership fee is $25 to the Area Artists Association. And then you also need to be a member of Lubesnik. So you will also have a membership to Lubesnik. If you have a current membership, then you've got that taken care of. But if you join our group, you'll also become a member of Lubesnik.
Beyond the Anything Goes exhibit, anything further down the pike in Area Artists in terms of the rest of the year?
For the rest of the year, I think the next thing that I would look for is the Lubesnik Arts Fest in August. We typically have a booth there. I don't know if we'll do that this year. That's a little ahead of our planning, but that is usually something that happens. And then in 2027, I think we're going to be doing an exhibit at the South Bend Museum.
Oh, excellent. That would be great. Mm-hmm. So in our final minute here, tell us a little bit, again, recap what this exhibit is and where it is and how people can come see it.
Yes, please do come to the reception for Anything Goes at the LaPorte County Convention and Visitors Center in Michigan City on Saturday, April 11th, 1 to 4. And then the show itself will run April 1st through Sunday, May 31st.
Well, that's great. And we're going to also feature you in a future interview about your artwork on Art in the Air, and a feature interview. That's Christine Hubble. She's actually serving as the Promotions Committee Chair and doing that for the Area Artists. Again, that's Anything Goes, April 1st through May 31st, LaPorte County Convention and Visitors Bureau on Franklin Street. Thank you so much for coming on Art in the Air Spotlight and sharing what's going on with the Area Artists Association.
Thank you both. It was lovely.
Yeah, very exciting news. Thank you.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Sunday is brought to you by Emberforge Consulting. With end-to-end expertise in learning strategy, design, and implementation, Emberforge turns your organization's knowledge into impact. To learn more, visit emberforgeconsulting.com. And as a reminder, if you'd like to have your event on Art on the Air Spotlight or have a longer feature interview, email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com.
This is Karen Maravilla of It's Just Serendipity and an arts advocate, and you are listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
We are honored to welcome Maria and Roman Villarreal to Art on the Air. Roman and Maria are a husband and wife artist team known for creating and collecting Chicano and Tejano art. Roman is a self-taught sculptor and painter working in stone, wood, and mixed media to portray life in the barrio, while Maria is a gifted textile artist and educator who also supports the community, often curating exhibitions for women artists and Day of the Dead at their gallery Under the Bridge. Roman recently had a major solo retrospective exhibition at Intuit Art Museum in Chicago. His work often explores Chicano heritage, urban fatherhood, the impact of the steel mill closures, He is in the permanent collection of the National Museum of Mexican Art and has significant public sculptures installed throughout the city. As a couple, they are deeply involved in community mentorship and preserving the cultural history of Chicago's Southeast Side. And also, I want to say a huge mahalo to Cesario Moreno of the National Museum of Mexican Art for our introduction. Thank you both for joining us on Art on the Air. So aloha and welcome, Maria and Roman. Very, very wonderful meeting you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, how we always like to start this off is kind of your origin story. We're going to start with you, Roman. I always like to tee it up by saying how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Roman.
Well, the first thing I would say basically is dedicated and stubborn. It has a lot to do with how we got to where we're at. Well, real quick, I was born here in on this side of the border in 1950. And it's interesting because my father, during that period of time, they were somewhere in Michigan. They were when the farm workers. They had heard that they were hiring in the mill. And him and his friends and his brothers came over here. And lo and behold, they were able to jump in. What they didn't know was they were scabs. In other words, they came here, they put them to work, and they were very fortunate because the majority of the time they don't get hired. They were, and they, my father ended up doing his 30 years, and he was one of the few people that were able to enjoy their retirement because everybody knows what happened here on the Southeast Side with what happened to the steel workers and the downfall of the community. So he was very one of the fortunate ones. Myself personally, I was 17 years old, and my father said, "You are having too much fun on the street. You're going to work." I went to work at 17 years old in the mill from 3 to 11 at 17 years old. At 18 years old, I had my first lotto win, Vietnam. Of all the lottos this neighborhood won, it was that one. We went there. And what makes it interesting is in our community, there's a monument to 12 parishioners. Not from the community. They were parishioners from Our Lady Guadalupe Church who perished during that period. And that was traumatic to us because we all went to school together in this. So right now in this community, that's one of the issues that we're working with right now to preserve the mural at Our Lady of Guadalupe. As an artist, I've always had the gift. And to me, that's always was important because everybody always asks me about my career as an artist, and I always refer to it as a gift. We all have a gift that's given to us in life. Mine's in this particular thing was shaping. Since I was little, my mother always tells me that I always playing with clay and shaping and doing this. And lo and behold, when the mill and everything, we had to start making changes in life, I had one gift left, and that was through the arts, my passion for the arts. And it was through this passion and my studying, because I'm a self-taught artist, I was able to get to the level that I am. And a lot of my young friends, I told them, don't do what I did. You know, education is number one. You know, as much education as you possibly can. I was just fortunate enough and stubborn and dedicated to what I was doing that I was able to get to the level that I'm at now. And basically a lot of times when I'm talking to people, I always tell people that I'm really not doing anything really great to me. All I'm doing is sharing my community with the world.
Well, and your heart. I mean, like what's in your heart and soul.
Well, that's the only thing that we can share because the way the world is going right now, that's one of the reasons that I refer to myself as an urban anthropologist. One day somebody asked me in an interview and I said, no, you know what? I'm an urban anthropologist in the sense that when they look back in life, what happened during these periods, they will have to look at the arts to see what we were doing during this period. So we play an important role in history and the future in this community.
Well, you know what? We'll take a break right there and let's kick it over to Maria. And likewise, we want to hear your origin story, how you got from where you were to where you're now. And by extension, maybe then how you two met and hooked up.
That's an interesting story.
Okay. I was born in the area they call on the west side on 18th. And my mother moved us here to South Chicago. I come from Grand Rapids, and then we came here when I was 4, and then my mother moved us here to South Chicago probably when I was about 12 or 11. Anyway, I turned around, and when I finished school, I went to California to try a new school, and I turned around and had this knack to want to do things for people. And so therefore, when I got married at a young age, we turned around and I started entertaining my kids. And so my kids grew up with Sesame Street. And so I created Sesame Street puppets from a secondhand store, Goodwill. And so that started me on wanting to learn more about arts and crafts. And so I realized I just retired a year ago, and I realized I had been doing it for 45 years, going all over the city with different organizations as an independent contractor, which I truly, truly enjoyed and loved. I started with Urban Gateways. They taught me who I became, the teacher of going into different schools, urban schools, in the heart of really hardcore neighborhoods, which it was great for me. And I end up realizing I am the teacher I was meant to be. Although I wanted to be a teacher and didn't get the education, I also am self-taught. And so therefore, I just turn around and am real grateful that I had a good life doing what I needed to do.
Yeah, I saw your video doing dioramas with SkyArt. It was just so good.
Yeah, that was something they asked at the Marie, can you come up with an idea? We're doing something new. And so I have always loved dioramas, always. Yeah. When I worked for Urban Gateways, we always had to take a trip with our class. And so like 14 years, I did a trip at the Field Museum. And the Field Museum people would say, why don't you work for us? Because my thing was, I have love for that history. So then they started a program. I've been on a few pilot programs. Gallery 37, when it first began. Park Voyagers, which was a great, great program, which we coincided with another museum. And then we went into the parks talking about a bit of that history. My thing was the Pawnee Earth Lodge. It was awesome. I must have made it about over 80 or something, different Pawnee Earth Lodges in different neighborhoods and given history. It was awesome. And I teamed up with the Museum of Science and Industry, and we coincided, worked together on workshops. I really enjoyed that. You know, so, other than that, I also, at the end of my career for like about, I don't know about, I worked for SkyArt for a long time. That's in my neighborhood. And I once worked about maybe 8 or 9 years, something like that. And I really didn't want to quit, you know, but life takes its toll and we get older and we have to find our other path. So it is in my neighborhood. And what I love about it, I used to tell the kids, I go, you'll see me in the neighborhood because I live in here, in this neighborhood. So that was a beautiful, beautiful organization also, which we still help out when they need us, you know. So
Maria, was it COVID that stopped the teaching for you? Because I know that ended my teaching when everything went to
Zoom. A funny thing, all the time that I was teaching, I joined After School Matters when it first began with Gallery 37. Then I took a hiatus because they changed a little. So then I met somebody. He says, you know, I want you to come work for us again. So I worked for them about 9 more years, and then COVID hit. My job was to teach kids how to hand sew, create things that we could put into the store, teach them how to cut patterns, how to make puppets. I pulled out everything that I knew to teach these teenagers. I was kind of scared to teach them because I always was with from kindergarten up to eighth graders. And I'm like, oh, I don't know if I could do teenagers. But it turned out to be real, real good. They're beautiful people, beautiful young people. And what really surprised me, and I had gone to a few different schools, these kids would come back every year, you know, until they did the 4 years. And it was a good job, easy job. And in the interview, they were like surprised. I would tell them, you know, if you don't do this right, I'll rip it apart. And if you give me any hassle, I'll fire you. So they're like, whoa. I said, this is a job. And so it was a good experience for both of us. And now when I see some of the students that remember me, they're like, you were this teacher at this school. And I like, oh, okay. I guess all teachers get that. You know what I mean? It just like throws you off.
I know.
Wait a minute. Where did I meet you at?
Usually at the grocery store.
Right. It was a good journey. It was a real beautiful experience for me. And my kids dabble in art. Our oldest is into catering and doing a whole party. And my youngest, she used to draw. And our son, he does poetry, and he tried dabbled in painting, but he I think his thing is poetry, probably, if they take the time. Life gets too fast.
It does. That's beautiful. So did both of you, like, my childhood growing up was, you know, I got kicked out of the house early in the morning, and then we had to be home when the streetlights went back on, and nobody really worried about us because all the neighbors would tell, you know, like there was that phone tree and all the neighbors would tell what was going on. So it wasn't like we were on our own, but did you have that kind of, like, where you could just explore and get into all sorts of things?
Roman had that. My mom, we grew up with a single parent. And so at a certain time when my mom had to go to work, we had to be in the house. So if we goofed off or played around, it would have to be before 6 o'clock. Because after that, we had to be in the house. And so it was a kind of, when I think about it, it was restricted a bit. You know what I mean? But our kids, they played like that. Right, Roman?
Yes, that's true. What's interesting about that period is that the children don't play outside no more. When during the time of the 90s, we call it the bloody 90s, I did a series of paintings where we would enjoy being in the front of the house. And after the world started getting a little bit more rougher, everybody moved to the backyards. Mm-hmm. Right. And what I miss a lot is that a lot of things that we did when we were kids, they don't exist no more, like hide and seek, release. The neighborhood gathered at a certain time, and we had structured games, and it was really a pleasant time to be living in this community. But the most important thing was that there was money. When the things changed for us the most is when this community and the industry started going downhill, and that's when the kids were affected by that. A lot of our young people that were there, because you got to understand that after the mill closed and that, there was very little left for these young people to really grab onto, except for one thing. Me and Maria used to go to a lot of meetings, be a good example. Mm-hmm. That was more important to us than anything else, because how are we going to change? Well, there's something very simple. Be a good example on what you're doing and how you're dealing with your fellow human beings, basically, bottom line. And it was through this that we were able to kind of ride that wave, and we were able to steer our children and any child that came in our path. We were trying to steer them in the right direction, mm-hmm. away from what was going on during that period, mm-hmm. because it was rough. It was very rough. Mm-hmm. I think our poor community, well, all industrial communities that were going on, like Detroit, everywhere there was industry, went through the same changes in during that period. So one of the beautiful things about it is, it's going to be hard to believe this, but COVID. Yeah. For other people, it was really different for us, but for some strange reason, me and Maria jumped into a very creative mode during that period. Even though we were in the house a lot together, we were literally working on one side. She was working on her crafts. Mm-hmm. I was working on my series of paintings. And it was a really interesting period because we really did a really interesting collection of art during that time, because I was making jewelry, painting. And we really had a good time while this was going on. You know,
you asked Esther about how COVID hit my teaching ability at the time. Well, I remember it was in February, the first COVID. And I remember my kids, the students at the time, were saying, something's going on, Miss V. They're thinking of closing the school. And I said, I didn't hear anything like that. Well, something's going on. Well, then COVID hit everybody. Mm-hmm. And so After School Matters wanted me to teach online. And as you know, I don't know a computer too well like that. And I said, I can't do that. And they go, why? I go, I need to be in their face to show if they make a mistake. I need to show them how to use a needle. I need to show them how to thread a needle. I said, it would be impossible for me to do that. And then to have the finished product, I'd have to go to everybody's house and get their work. I said, that makes no sense to me. So that kind of COVID kind of ended that for me. And then when after 2 years and they wanted to start up again, I was just in a different zone at the time.
Right.
Different time in life, how we change.
You know, it's interesting, Maria, because that's kind of what I did with the after school program, too. I wanted to make sure that all this, you know, because, you know, we grew up with sewing just as a natural part of our day. But, you know, children these days really don't. And I really wanted them to have that experience with the needle, to know how to thread, to know how to sew. But right, during COVID, I couldn't teach those classes. But I was surprised at the intimate connection I still had with the students via that, you know, online stuff. It surprised me tremendously that we had like a true connection, but it couldn't be with textiles. You're right. It had to be with other media.
I have a friend she's still with After School Matters. She's a chef and I see her on videos and she's awesome, but she had to deliver all the stuff to her students, which was, you know, intense. But, I just think when I first went to After School Matters about my sewing thing, they're like, oh, well, we got sewing machines, Maria. I said, no, I don't want to teach with sewing machines. I want to teach by hand. Right, they need to understand to use their hands, how to cut fabric, how to do all these simple things. And so what really attracted them back to me was the mere fact from cloth you can create, whether it be aprons or puppets or pillows, you know what I mean? Right. Anything you want, you can do. I actually had some girls that were going to be designers. I go figure out the idea, make the pattern, and just cut and give yourself extra all the time. Extra crap. It worked out well.
I'm interested in both of your childhoods. Was there a lot of art going on in the household? Like Roman, were you creating things from a young age? And then the same question back to Maria.
Sure. No. Like I mentioned earlier, mine was started very young because I was a shaper, playing okay. But believe it or not, my introduction into the art world was gang graffiti. I was one of the guys that developed a design for the club, and it became my duty to start spreading the message. So that would be, I guess, my first introduction into people appreciating what I was doing as an artist. But then my second introduction into the arts was when I was in the military, and I was always broke, so I had the idea of duplicating photographs for some of the fellow soldiers that were there, and that was another encouragement, because I was fairly decent. I mean, I'm not going to say I was doing great work, but they liked it, and I kept going and going and going. But it goes all the way back to the passion that was always there for me. You know, my mind never really dwelt too far away from the arts. And even when Maria mentioned earlier with our children, how she entertained the children, we used to do that on a whim. Like one that this neighborhood never forgot is we one day got together with some group of friends of ours, and we created a spook house to entertain the kids, our kids. Little did we know that this little thing that we did for 4 or 5 years became an urban South Chicago legend. Everybody that lived in this community went to our spook house and never forgot it. And it amazed us that everything that we did, we gave it away. Mm-hmm. We were always doing things from the spirit, but it never dawned on us how it affected the community around us because they never forgot us.
Mm-hmm. And my introduction to art was because my mother and my older brother asked me, you know, you didn't get this from us. Where'd you get it from? But I was telling my older brother, I remember my mom, when we were in Catholic school, and I saw her with newspaper, cut out a pattern, and she made me a black skirt, and she sewed it by hand. So I never forgot that. And then later on, when I had kids, I wanted to entertain. So after I made all the puppets, and I slowly from this, I still got the count. But everything else I gave away, the Count Dracula I still have. But I went from this size to this size. The thing was humongous. And so then after that, I did a few puppet shows in the neighborhood. And what made me surprised me is, like Roman said, people remembered you. Even my girlfriends, yeah, I remember seeing your puppet show in the bush. And I'm like, what? But, you know, that's what started me on the roll. And just the love of art, of what I wanted to do, is what inspired me.
And entertaining our children.
And entertaining our kids. And And then when I see Ron create, as I told him the other day, as I'm cleaning up the sculptures for this show, I'm like, gee, Ron, I get fascinated every time I see your work, and I live with you. So you just, I'm just looking right now in my life for that time to do my studio. You know, we've had this discussion before, Esther.
Right.
And so it's just that time, but it's just a matter of finding time. That's how I got into the arts.
After a brief break, we'll return to our Art in the Air guests today, Roman and Maria Villarreal. Art in the Air listeners, do you have a suggestion for a possible guest on our show? Whether it's an artist, musician, author, gallery, theater, concert, or some other artistic endeavor that you are aware of, or a topic of interest to our listeners. Email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com. Our show relies on the support of not only our show underwriters, but also our listeners who make donations to this station. Your support of this station will ensure Art in the Air may continue bringing you the best of the arts and culture programming for Northwest Indiana and beyond. If Art in the Air is important to you, please consider supporting this station with a one-time contribution or even making an ongoing sustaining contribution. For information on how to make a contribution, go to this station's website or our show website, breck.com/AOTA. And thank you. And we return to our Art in the Air guests today, Roman and Maria Villarreal on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. And the question I have is, and I know I touched on earlier, is how the two of you got together. I think there's got to be a great story there.
Uh-oh, that's a good one.
I know there's certainly some smiles.
Well, actually, believe it or not, we met through one of my sisters when I was just going into the military, the basically bottom line. And through this, we started communicating with each other through mail. And then one day I received a letter from her that she was going to now be in San Jose, California. And at the time, in 1969, I had landed in Oakland on my way to Vietnam. But President Johnson during that time in 69 was bringing troops back. And my mother always said, the Virgin de Guadalupe saved me. Yes, Mom, you're right. I was one of the soldiers that my name was called out. Put all your army gear back from that you were going overseas and go over here and you know, go over there. So I was sent to Fort Ord, California. That's how it officially started for me and Maria.
Right. And I was going to school out there in the mountains of San Jose. It was a beautiful spot. Different, totally different from Chicago. And one Saturday morning, my younger cousin at the time, she says, I was cleaning up my room and she says, hey, there's a soldier at the door. And I said, get out of here. You know, and she goes, no, really, there's a soldier at the door. And so the third time she comes in and says, no, really, I'm for real. There's a soldier at our house. So I go to the door and it was Roman. And I'm like, what are you doing here? So, you know, then after that, he would come on every other weekend or something. And it was weird stuff. We were young. And I thought all this time he was staying in a hotel or something. And literally, he was sleeping across the street in the park underneath a bush or something. I'm like, what? So it was just weird. So after that... We dated each other, and then you got shipped somewhere, right? Or I decided to go home. I wanted to come back home to Chicago.
Well, the part that's interesting is once her mother found out who she was
seeing,
which was me, Roman Villarreal, I was an interesting person as a teenager.
Yeah, he was.
So that day, I'll never forget it, her uncle Thomas, I came home and there was a group of guys in the parking lot where they were at, their lot.
All my men cousins.
And he comes up to me and he says, her mom, Juanita, wanted them to take care of me.
Yeah.
So I look at him and I go, what are you talking about? And he goes, yeah, well, they were going to beat me up, right?
Right.
So I look at him and I go, is it going to be everybody or is it going to be one at a time? So he goes, no, it's going to be one at a time. And I says, it's fine, I ain't got no problem. So he seen me put my pack down, but he seen me put something in my mouth. And he goes, what are you doing? He goes, well, I don't want my teeth knocked out. So I put a little thing here. And then I got up and I said, okay, I'm ready. And what does he say? welcome to the family.
Right.
Her mom never forgave me.
No, she never forgave him either. And it was just so unusual. I'm like, what do you mean you investigated him? What are you talking about, Mom? You know, so we were young. I mean, we were really young. And so we actually had friends in the neighborhood, but nah, they're not going to last. Rome don't know her. She don't know Roman. You know, and it was true. I didn't know Roman and all the unusual things he did.
And 57 years later.
And come 56.
Oh, 56.
Our anniversary is April 20th. It'll be 56 years we've been together.
Whoa.
We have three kids, eight grands, and 15 great grands.
Wow.
And we are still in the arts, and our great grands are more into the arts than our grands. And so it's beautiful to hang out with them, and half of them live in Texas and some of them live in Indiana. So it's a blessing. That's the way I look at it. It's a blessing.
It sounds like perfection.
What a story. What? Oh, my gosh.
The funny thing is that we got married at 11:20 when we were before it was
4:20.
4:20 before it became what it is now.
Yeah.
And our kids, did he do that on purpose? No.
Yeah, they called us up 1 year. We'd been married a long time. And so then they, Mom, our oldest goes, she had the speaker on at her house. And she goes, Mom, did Dad plan it like that, that you got married on 4:20? And now it's the legalization of marijuana. And I said, no, if you look up the history of that, we got married in 1970. They didn't get that into
the 90s.
Something. 1 year, I go, no, do your history. We got married a long time before that. So it's a joke.
It's so Roman, I read that the first material you started working with was wood. So what type of wood did you start carving? And how did you, I mean, was carving your first kind of discipline, or, I mean, other than the graffiti art, which, by the way, you know, we've interviewed Marco Salazar. He graffitied my car 1 year and was part of that whole, but in Marco's neighborhood, his yeah. neighborhood, they sort of donated their garages in the alley. So the kids could graffiti that, you know, rather than. So I don't know if you had any of those kind of experiences growing up.
No, not in the spray thing. And it's funny because you're talking about Buster.
Yeah.
And, it was funny because years later, we had a show down in Chicago at the Cultural Center. And I was the only one that had his real name, Roman Villarreal. Everybody else was Traz, Buster, Flex, this and that, because they're outlaws and they have street names. And I was the only one in that show that was really his name. So it was funny to me during that time. But my introduction was always with the materials around me. Wood was, I started working with the scrap wood, which basically is the cottonwood, the elm. And little by little, some of my earliest works are, well, here's an example. My early works were very intricate, because I was doing a lot of really heavy research and all that. And one day I had a piece of work in an alabaster piece that was being represented in Manhattan, New York. The agent called me and said, Roman, we just got good news for you. That piece that I call When Myths Are Destroyed is went on sale, and we have a buyer for $10,000. I said, oh, wow, that's great. So I grabbed the phone. I said, Maria, they called me from New York. The piece is up for sale. They said $10,000. She looks at me and she goes, tell them that it's off the market, that it's not for sale. And I'm going, wait a minute, whoa, what happened? She decided upon herself that since I wasn't doing that type of work at that caliber at that time, she decided that it should stay in the family. Manhattan didn't like that. They were very upset with me. They even went up to an extra $2,000 and said, no, you tell you what, you know, I'm sorry. I told them, I'm sorry. There's nothing I could. So it was off the market. Years later, about a year ago, one of the Senator Marty Castro, one of the people here from Chicago, he came here to the studio and he bought like $4,000 worth of work off us. He looked at that piece and Maria told him the story. And he told her that if this family ever needed anything, emergency, that he would be willing to pay $15,000 mm-hmm. for that piece. And I said, mm-hmm. well, thank you. You know, that's something we could look forward to. But no, we've gone through all the medias, like, because when you're a self-taught artist, you have to teach yourself history. And the funniest thing to me, I used to have a friend of mine Vietnam vet. He went to the Art Institute. Try talking about Dadaism and the art movements in a neighborhood steel mill bar. They thought you were nuts. I had no idea what we were talking about, but yes, we were so involved in what we were doing that we were just, at least we had somebody to share our conversations with each other. So right. That was interesting. And the one that I just remember recently, we had my Intuit show. I was having an Intuit show there, and there was some kind of a write-up was up about me. And in the write-up, they compared my work to Cézanne. And so I'm going like this. I'm listening to them, and I listen to them. After the conversation, I go, there's only one thing. Who the heck is Cézanne? I had never heard of him until that day when they compared my work to his work. So I did a little bit of research on it. Goes, I got it. I get it. But it was interesting that how they could compare your work to other artists, when they learn this. I, being an outside artist, you're always learning. I have never stopped learning to this day. I'm always experimenting, doing with this thing. And I think that's a plus. But I will always recommend get a degree. It's very important because we know in art history that I'm an outside artist and I will always have to take second place to academia. I've accepted that and I understand why, you know, and it was, but when you become part of the Intuit Museum, it gave you a better pride of being an outside artist. Mm-hmm. You know, it gives you a different feel for it because we're literally at the same level now as academia as far as our sales and what we've been doing over the years. And it comes through dedication.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what the National Museum of Mexican Art gave to me in the 80s when it first opened, because being a textile artist, I was always dismissed, like from the 60s and 70s, you know, as being sort of a grandma craft. And not like I would have friends saying, well, I'm a fine artist. You're just a crafter. And so it was the Museum of Mexican Art, the National Museum of Mexican Art, that started showing textiles. And it was like, OK, textiles are in the museum now. And it's, you know.
Right. Right.
Sort of, what's really beautiful, we just recently went to see our friend Ray Patlan's farewell show, which ended this past week. And we go all the way back to the first murals that were painted here in Chicago. Mm-hmm. It was either between Ray Patlan mural in Pilsen or the Wall of Respect on the South Side. Mm-hmm. And for us, we literally experienced with everybody because we were part of the South Side movement. We were part of the Pilsen movement. And we got to see, we're privileged to get to see that how art evolved over the years from, especially the young people like my friends from Keesa in Indiana, how they evolved from street artists to master artists that they are now.
Right.
And it's really beautiful to see the transition and how it happened. When I first met them, I had a studio and a warehouse in the 150th and Calumet, one of the warehouses for the city of Hammond. So I met them for the first time. I went in, there was an abandoned building in the back, and I seen these taggings. So I went on the wall, and I wrote down my name, and I put down, my studio was on the corner, let's hook up, this and that. So the message was on the wall. Lo and behold, it created a friendship to this day with the client. I am an honorary member of Keesa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I have never sprayed. I have never had the curiosity to grab a spray can because that's a different. They took it to a whole new level. I'm so proud of them because they contributed to art history. Mm-hmm. This is a true urban American thing that they created. Now, the story is who created it first, New York, California, whatever. But the fact that it became a worldwide thing from the street. Mm-hmm. And we're very proud of that.
Mm-hmm. And not only that, the Keesa crew that we know, Flex and his friends, the five or six of them, they're our kids are older than them. That's what's so funny about it. What? You're the same age as my kid? My kid's older than you? It's so funny. They're a good group of young men artists.
And they consider us the elders, which is a hard hat to carry for us because we look around and go, we're the elders?
Yeah.
We don't feel like elders.
It's an honor to be considered that. We pioneer this, and it's a privilege. I'm glad that that we got to this level as a couple, And as artists, to be sharing what we've been doing all these years, and it's just, and it's coming back to us in tenfold. Mm-hmm. We might not be financially well out there, but we're blessed in another way.
Mm-hmm. And we're blessed to have you on our show today. And you're listening to Art in the Air, and you're listening to our guest today, Roman and Maria Villarreal on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
The beauty is that there is no expiration date on creating art, you know, so you can still be, you know, I mean, you're still innovating and still creating. I mean, Maria, you just sent me images of your, you know, your newest work. I mean, that's like that's the beauty of art.
That's true. I did the last two pieces that I created were made from things that I had for years put away. And so one is called L&L, Latina Love, and the other one is Journeys of the Heart, which have deep meaning for me. And I question, you know, why am I going so deep? But then every artist who comes out with their work does that deep stuff first, and then they hang loose and then do their other style. So I think that's where I'm at, slowly coming out.
Well, another interesting thing that we could share is just a while back we were, I guess the winter was the cold days. So one morning I get up and I said, Maria, you know what? Let's do something different. Let's sit together today and let's do jewelry. So lo and behold, by the time we got through with that week, we must have created about dozens of pieces of jewelry, and they all sold. We sold out in one day.
Yeah.
And so that I thought, nah, we're not going to that. So I just took them and I was showing it to friends. Right. We sold everything.
Everything.
Except the things that belong to Maria.
Yeah.
Because I have certain things that I made for her that were special. And people wanted to buy them. Maria goes, no, it's mine. You can't sell them. I said, okay.
Fine. So I said, give me my jewelry, dude. I can't trust you.
That was actually going to be my question before you said about jewelry. But I'll go ahead and ask it. Is there a kind of art that you have not done that you would like to do, that you'd like to explore doing, like in some sort of painting or some other type of thing that you haven't done?
Speaking for me, I would like to learn to paint, but my friend who passed away a few years back, who really was one of my mentors, he turned around and said, you paint, but you paint with fabric, Maria.
Yeah.
Eventually, when you feel like painting, because I wanted to learn the grid and all that, and then he says, you paint through fabric. You know, if ever you decide to learn to paint, because he tried to get me to paint, but it was always time. There was no time. You know what I mean, Esther? No time. Yeah. So then I said, okay, that's what I would like to do, paint, because I dabble in a lot of little stuff. As you said, Esther, they call us craft artists, but in reality, they don't give us enough credit because we create things that, you know, comes naturally. It's one of a kind stuff.
Well, my little project last year, I don't know if you're familiar with, I did two snapping turtles for Porter County, Indiana, the sand dunes.
Right.
And they were 10 feet, 5 feet by 3. But to me, one day I want to be able to afford a rock that big and create for me, because I'm always working commissions for people. But while I'm still strong enough to work, I want to do a Roman Villarreal original where I could do whatever I want in a large stone, maybe 10, 15 feet, you know, a couple of tons, you know. That's fun. That's a lot of fun. You know, there's nothing like coming home, have a hard day's work, because we come from working class, and working to us is always coming home tired, this and that, because you put in a full day's work, whether you're a farm worker or you're in this. A lot of these young people now don't enjoy that fact that they're missing something. But it's up to us to continue the momentum and shift. But that's one of my passions right now, to be able to have a rock that belongs to me where I could do Roman.
So Roman, with the stone sculpture, because I've done some stone sculpture and I didn't want to use any like pneumatic or pneumatic tools. I did it all with a chisel. But after doing that a few times, I think I'm going to go to electricity to help out. Do you just do it by chisel or do you use power tools?
No, in the early years, it's advanced. It's gone a long ways. But no, originally it was just basically hammer and chisel and the hand tools. Now there's so many tools on the market now that make cut your work in half, literally. Like the one that I just recently did, I had air hammers, miniature jackhammers. I mean, there's so many new things on the market, and it's worth the investment to me. So I'm always investing in tools and new techniques in the arts. The newest thing right now that I've been noticing is they have an acrylic marker that has a brush and a point at the end of it. They haven't mastered it yet, but I'm enjoying them. I'm enjoying the effect of the waste on, because like I said, as an outside artist, you're always experimenting.
Always.
And my passion is that I call it a creativity flow. And I paint with my hands. A lot of people don't realize that as a sculptor, I realize that there's a certain technique that paint will mud. If you don't do it correctly, it will mud. But for some strange reason, I started messing with it with my, of course, with a glove on. And I learned to manipulate and control the paint with my fingers. And that, everybody looks at my work and, wow, how did you do this? And I told them, with my fingers, my hand. I'm a sculptor. It's easier for me to put my hands in there.
Right.
And once I learned this technique, I mastered it. I'm working more and more. That's why I'm not touching the spray can.
Well, you know, we want to make sure we save some time for your upcoming exhibit. It's actually opened on March 20th, and this, of course, will be broadcast after that. But you have some exhibit in Miller Beach, and tell us a little bit about what we'll see there and some of the dates and everything.
Well, the beauty of it, I'm going to thank the Miller Beach staff for allowing me to come in there. You know, they're really interesting. They're really interesting. Ever since I've been going to Miller Beach, I was always fascinated with their role in the art community. My hat down to them, because I remember I went to one event where they were painting in the alley, the gangways here, there. And I've already shown at the thing as a group show, but this time it's going to be a one-man show. And I'm really looking forward to share my work with Indiana. And one of the beauty of it is that the message as an artist is going out to different communities. And there's very few places left for outside artists to be able to show their works. And I'm glad that this opens the door for us to more and more people to see the caliber of artwork that some of us are doing over all these years. And I liked what Julia did together to put together for me this thing. And I said, wow, did she really put together a good format for me, the explanation for my show, which is going to be March the 20th. And then I'll be having my artist talk will be April 12th at 2 p.m. So whoever wants to come and join us that day and come view our work, of course, come see the show. You know, that's very important to see. And then we'll show a little bit of feedback on the 12th. I'll be there to talk about my work. And again, I want to thank you guys for sharing your time frame with us, and so that we could share with going on with the world. But one day, hopefully soon, Maria might have her one woman show. This is a future goal of ours. Because believe it or not, she has quite a collection. It's just that we have to put it in the right space.
Well, besides the upcoming exhibit, what maybe down the road? Do you have something planned after this March-April exhibit?
Oh yes. I got, right now, I'm scheduled for about maybe four more shows after this, group shows and one-man shows. One show that I'm having that's really, really different, I'm having a water pipe show. Now, this is interesting. Without realizing it, I have been making water pipes out of brandy, tequila, this and that, just on a whim on my part. I was just, you know, just on a whim and working this. But by the time I got through, I must have 50 or 60 of them. And some curator from a thing came to visit me for dinner one day, and he happened to see them, and he goes, what are you doing with these things? I said, nothing. I'm just
creating them.
Next thing I know, he has a one-man show where I'm going to be exhibiting this particular works, and then my paintings that deal with this particular works. So it's going to be a really interesting show for Illinois.
Wow.
Because I know, I think Indiana is still a little bit strict on some of these things. So I'm glad that we're in Illinois.
Maria, anything coming up for you?
Well, first of all, we hope to meet you and Esther in person, maybe at the opening. And yes, I usually do a show for Women's Month in one of the galleries that Romy rents. But I didn't do it this month because I thought it was going to be snowing like crazy and freezing. So I had told my friends, a woman's show, I told them I wanted to do it in May 2nd. of this year.
Oh, nice.
Esther, I hope you can put one of your pieces in.
I would love to, Maria. Thank you.
Well, yeah, we appreciate you sharing your wonderful art journey together, how you got together, and everything like that. It's just been a wonderful visit with you and for our audience. And again, I encourage people to come out to the show at the Miller Beach Marshall J. Gardner Center. It's The Gift of Shaping, Works in Painting and Sculpture. It opened on March 20th, but it runs through April 24th. You can see it there. You can find out the hours. And if you want to see Roman in person, and I'm sure Maria will be along, his artist talk is on Sunday, April 12th at 2 p.m. And you can see all the work of Roman, his South Side work, about steel mills, how he started there and everything, and can tell you the work he has. Roman and Maria, this has been a very enjoyable experience. Glad you shared it with our audience and sharing everything about what you did, your art journey. And thank you for coming on Art in the Air.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Esther.
So delightful, and it went by way too fast.
Have a great day.
And thank you, Indiana.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art in the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Ember Forge Consulting, Thoughtful Marketing and Digital Learning, built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art in the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.